It's your daily sports dump. And I'm your host, Joe Canelli. Yeah, that's a whole other episode that we've done. That's the other podcast. 70-hour
conversation.
But folks, this is this podcast. I'm already into it. I'm not going to edit any of that. It's your daily sports dump. I'm Joe Canelli. We got a very fun episode. We haven't had three people in a while, and we do. So there's no jokes today. We got a couple other things, but we have Nooch. Say hi, Nooch.
Hello there.
He's a familiar voice to all of you, and a less familiar, but not completely unfamiliar voice to the podcast, James Kirkland. I'm sorry. Author James Kirkland
here.
Thank
you. Thank you. Hi. That's
every time I've teased this a couple times this week, and I keep going, James Kirkland. Nope. Author. Which is now what it's become.
Yeah.
It's not author James Kirkland. It's James Kirkland, no, author James Kirkland.
You know what? I should change my Twitter handle to that. That's
James
actually
Kirkland,
better.
No. Yeah. Author James Kirkland.
That is better.
That's I'm what I've been calling you.
I'm going to do it and not credit you.
That's fine. That's happened many times before. Yeah. I remember a guy at Second City quit and gave a interview on WGN and said, you know, I learned a long time ago that the people I hire at Second City aren't necessarily going to like me because of the type of people they are. That was a verbatim quote from me that I said to him around union negotiation time.
Wow.
So I didn't get credit for that either, and
Joe,
I'm more pissed about that.
Uncredited Canelli.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or Joe Canelli, uncredited.
Yes. And I'm glad we're into a silly thing now, because we were moments ago talking about politics. And the last thing I'll say is, I'm Bernie Sanders.
And I approve this message?
No, I know Bernie Sanders because I feel like I am him.
Oh, okay.
And that's what worries me the most about Bernie Sanders. Is that his similarity to me, unfortunately.
Bernie Sanders smokes a lot of pot.
He can't. If he was that age and smoked as much weed as me, that's got to be the difference. Unless,
hey.
If I found out my uncle also lives in Vermont, and my uncle's he was a gun collector in terms of Civil War guns, not like putting together an arsenal.
Okay.
He was also a Revolutionary War reenactor, Civil War. And he played a Hessian. So he had the big mustache and everything. And I was like,
what's a Hessian?
The German mercenaries who were hired by the British to fight in the Revolutionary War.
No shit.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Oh, wow.
Yep. They were big. Big armies, you know, they'd buy armies.
And the word Hessian means assassin.
I believe,
a different word.
Hash.
Way back.
From hash. Yeah. Well, that's a different way. This is.
Oh, the cult of hashish?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's tying it back to
all
marijuana.
The way back there. Yeah. There, it all comes back to that. I don't know where the rest of that was going, but. The Hessian. So I said, Uncle Frank, you know, you're moving to Vermont, all those hippies up there. And he's like, they're not all hippies in Vermont. And I was like, okay, okie dokie. You know, there's like, there's hunters and hippies in Vermont.
1% of the population is not hippies.
It may be a little similar to actually Oregon in some ways,
yes.
Where you've got a rural type population, a little bit of, you know, you've got kind of a hipstery, hippie vibe.
Metropolis of Burlington.
And then you also have a little bit of a, you know, white nationalist vibe somewhere else too, in other parts.
Yeah.
Or let's call it
Green Mountain Boy nationalism.
Good old boys.
I was going to say libertarianism, which is, you know, been co-opted by a number of people.
Yep.
Yeah, just folks don't like folks telling what to do.
True. Now, Oregon was founded as a whites-only state. That's also true. but
embarrassing.
We are here to embrace
the
other side of that.
Thank
and
you.
And so if I may, and I'm just going to tease this because I do have to do a segment before. I don't have to, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
But James, you were here, and you were here before because you are the author of the Bill Walton Mysteries.
Thank you, yes.
Which are mysteries at this point.
Yes.
Last time we spoke to you, it was the Bill Walton Mysteries,
plural.
But we only had a mystery at that point. That one got solved.
It did.
And at the end, it says, go ahead, give the, I like your voice saying the end thing.
The final line in the book is, the Bill Walton Mysteries will continue in Hawaii.
And that leads us to your current book, Fire on the Mountain, which we're going to talk about in a couple minutes.
Ooh.
But first, we have a segment that we've been doing. I did not think this segment was going to last this long, but what it is, it's mock draft season because now we're 2 months away. But mock draft season starts about 2.5 months outside. of the NFL draft. Mock draft. Oh, now, this isn't fantasy. This is football mock draft. Yeah. Mel Kiper.
Yes. The big board.
There was a guy. Yes. There's a guy who did 8 mock drafts before the combine.
Okay.
Jeez.
He's a mock draft expert. I'm also a mock draft expert, but I'm only going to do 1 mock draft.
Okay.
You know why? I'm an expert.
It's perfect.
If you do 10 mock drafts, I don't feel like you're an expert.
Yep.
You're just throwing a lot of darts.
Yes. But what I've done is every day that somebody puts out a new mock draft, I'm going to give a mock draft update, and it has not disappointed yet.
Okay.
For 3 straight weeks, one of these sites has put out a brand new mock draft, which is ridiculous. Today, it's The Ringer. Puts out their 2020 NFL draft guide. And for you guys, I'm not going over the draft, or these mock drafts.
Yeah.
What I'm doing is pointing out the uselessness of all of them.
Okay.
And each one of these has a line or two within their description that essentially says there's no need for you to read the rest of this. Like, we've still got 2 months. There's going to be a lot of changes.
Yeah.
Anything can change at this point. These are all like...
Yeah, because the honest answer would just be question marks, but that's not a hot take.
You can't do 100 of those and get people to read it. But I'm suffering through it so that the listeners don't have to. And what I do is whatever...
So brave.
And I'm thank you for pointing out my bravery.
Thank you.
Thank you for thanking me.
You for
You're
your
welcome
service.
Is what I should say. And so The Ringer has their both big board and mock draft. So a couple observations. And here's the line that says you don't have to read the rest. A breakdown of how he thinks the first round could unfold. How he thinks it could unfold. Those are 2 disclaimers right in that sentence there.
Okay.
This one is updated regularly. So this is going to be updated regularly. And let me just make another comment. The first 5 picks... Burrow, Young, Okuda, Simmons, Tagovailoa. That's in stone now. You don't need to look at any more mocks. The order may change
locked
a little bit, but that are your top 5 guaranteed.
Yeah.
Okay? So stop looking at the mock drafts. That's enough of that.
What about the 6'7 guy who ran the under 4 second 40 or whatever he did?
The linebacker man?
Yeah.
Simmons?
Yeah.
They got him going to the Giants, and I like when the Giants take a linebacker real high. The last one they took this high, Lawrence Taylor.
Warren Ewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to know about him.
Did piles of cocaine, unapologetically.
It worked.
And ended Joe Theismann's career.
Yeah.
And he was concerned about it. So he didn't end it and walk away. He went, get the ring out of here. I killed a man.
Right.
I thought he killed a man. So basically, do you read any mock drafts, guys?
No.
Great.
Not for football.
Yeah, that's true. For basketball, I will peruse a mock draft.
It's a more impactful draft, ultimately, and I find that a little more interesting at the top because each player is going to play.
Of football. Like, mm-hmm. There's so many guys taken. It's just mm-hmm.
Now, when a guard gets taken in the NBA, that's an interesting pick.
Yeah.
When a guard gets taken in the NFL draft, that is a non-entity.
I don't know what they do.
Never, ever see that guy.
Don't know who they block.
That might be the last time you hear his name, and he could play 12 years in the league.
I agree.
Yeah. Be an All-Pro 2 times.
Yeah, perennial All-Pro.
Yes. And unless he goes crazy like Incognito, he's going to be Incognito.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah,
that's improv, guys.
I will not get credit for that.
Mm-mm. No. So that was our mock draft update.
Can I also put a little ender on there?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be allowed to show highlight packages beyond a second or two for linemen any longer because they're really unexciting.
So
and they talk about them like, oh, look how he moves in the slide. Nobody cares. Nobody wants to see some guy sumo shoving another guy.
No. Well, look.
He prevented the sack.
Mm-hmm. You can.
He prevented the exciting play from happening.
Yeah.
65% of his pancake blocks were on advisors. Who cares? Football makes more money.
Right. Is your mic on?
Nothing. I don't think so. I tried to turn it off a little while ago.
All right. Just talk into it. That's all. Even with a mic stand, you end up missing the mic. You're very animated today. I get it.
I'm excited.
We have
annoying nasally voices. We have these beautiful.
Yes, he does have some deep pipes.
Nice, velvety voice.
I'll balance
I'm just.
You guys.
He's not. Yeah. We got that East Coast nasal thing. Yeah. We can't get away from.
Yeah, we're mosquitoes. Yeah.
Well, see, that's that. These are the benefits of the country air of Oregon.
Yes,
the mountain air, the ocean, the mountains.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No wonder Walton talks that way.
The Willamette River, the Columbia, the Mississippi of the West.
Yes.
Look at it carve her beautiful canyons through the great granite of Oregon and Washington.
There's going to be a lot more of this. And the nice thing about your mysteries, which we can get right into right now. I'll do my baseball. Maybe at a certain point, we'll just go into the baseball preview, and then we'll come back to this.
Yeah, baseball previews are just as fun as mysteries.
They're not. It'll be quick. It'll be like the mock draft one.
I'm excited. I like
I'll basically ask you if you know any
crime in baseball now.
Oh yes,
yes. That are being
a lot of good crime.
There's a crossover here, but yeah, my book is kind of a crossover between sports and mystery in a way that's never been done before. I think.
Yeah. Sports and mystery, and you have an incredible character.
Yes.
That is a real person.
Yes.
And so he's advertising your books constantly.
Yeah, by not even referencing the books, just being himself. Mm-hmm. The great thing about Bill Walton is that if you were writing a fictional character of Bill Walton, you would have stopped at 7 feet tall with red hair. That's enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy enough.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's stop there. Oh, no. Let's add that he's been to 975 Grateful Dead shows.
Yes.
What? No, okay, too crazy. Oh, no, let's add that he's so in love with his bike, he names it and rides it thousands of miles across the country. What are you talking about? No, this guy is
also
unrealistic.
He played for the most incredible coach, you know, of his era. And
right.
So
the
with all these other counterculture. Yes.
Yep.
The crossover of counterculture.
Brilliant coach who invented. I did a lot of research about John Wooden in writing these books. I didn't realize how influential he was until I truly did a deep dive.
Didn't he really win a natty as a player at Purdue?
He was good.
I don't know if they won a natty.
I don't know if he won a natty.
But he played big time college as a player.
Yes, and that was really back in the day.
That's
like peach wood basket style. And
exactly, and that in a way is what made him so
crossed over Naismith.
Yes,
you know?
right. And so he was playing the game on skill, not on athleticism.
Right.
Which it transformed around the time, maybe before Walton a little bit, but there was still skill. And so that's the thing. Walton is this counterculture guy.
Yeah.
But when it comes to basketball,
he's a purist.
He is a fundamental purist. Yeah. And was one of the best. Now, I heard yesterday Tony Kornheiser, who I'm a fan of, he and Wilbon were briefly talking about best passing big man. And Wilbon's... he says Wes Unseld, Kornheiser.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilbon says not Walton. And Kornheiser says Walton learned everything he learned from watching. Now, I don't know anything about Wes Unseld, except that he won a title with Washington. But apparently he was a better passer to Kornheiser than Walton.
Wow. He said that Walton learned everything from Wes Unseld?
Well, he said Wes Unseld did everything that Walton did, but before.
Oh, how dare he.
Right? I mean, you know, who knows?
The audacity. Yeah.
Well, Kornheiser also is a Washington guy.
Thank you. Yeah, I was.
So I just realized, came to my mind, he is a big homer. So
I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah. He thinks John Wall is the best point guard. No, he doesn't.
Bradley Beal, please run for office. You're the stability that this country needs.
The consistency.
The consistency, night after night, putting the team on the shoulders and carrying them across the finish line. Much times to failure. But as John Wooden said, the only way of failing is not trying your best.
Whoa.
Please.
Wow. Nice. And Beal said something nice the other day. I don't want to get too in the weeds about sports,
please.
But he mentioned that he knew the team was 1-8 when he scores over 40. And he's like, I don't want to score 40 because we keep losing when I score 40. So he's already got his money, so he can say that now. But
that'd be
almost a little unusual.
Though. Beal and Unseld or Beal and Kirkland, I'd vote for them for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we don't want to dive too deeply into that, but really you could almost name any combination of two names at this point.
I'd consider it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It does not look as bad as other options to me. So let's get into the not only the book, but you were mentioning when we were outside how much of being an author is not writing.
Yeah, so much so. It's
what's the journey from the last book to this one?
The journey. Well, I started writing right away. Wanted to get the second book out as soon as possible, and having the same schedule.
Ride the wave.
My favorite authors do have like Harry Bosch or Jack Reacher have like once a year these books drop.
Is it a consistent month for them, or is it just around like, oh, in fall you'll see a
More like in fall,
probably before Christmas.
Exactly. You know these publishers work unbelievable, but yeah, that's that. We wanted to capitalize on college basketball. March seemed like the best time to do it, and writing it was just so much fun because it's characters that I love. I mean, again, this journey of writing this book, I literally took Toni Morrison's advice. You know, she said, if you know of a book that you want to read that doesn't exist,
write it.
It's your responsibility to write it.
Whoa.
You got to do it. So I was like, all right, Toni Morrison.
Good job, Toni.
Let's go.
And I'm glad you gave the quote, because at first you said, I just took Toni Morrison's advice. And I was like, does everyone know this advice but me? So I'm glad you followed up with the advice.
Yeah.
And so this is the book that you wanted to read?
Yeah. As a basketball fan, as a fan of Walton, as a fan of mysteries, like I just wanted to see what would happen, and I didn't know what was, starting the book, that was another fun thing. Writing mysteries is the mystery of what is this mystery going
to
be?
Well, and that is really, to me, I would guess the hard work of it, so to speak, in that you're an improviser, I'm an improviser. Dialogue, and especially when you have a character like
dialogue's
that,
easy.
Can be easier for us. But especially with a mystery, there is, like, you can do, like, oh, here's, you know, Owen Meany. So this is all the things that happened to him in his life and stuff like that. It goes on. A mystery, you need, there's math, so to speak.
There is.
You've got to tie it in. Geometry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which basketball also has that.
And I know, I read about a thing, why our human brains are like this. It's because at night in the jungle when we were sleeping as our ancestors, you'd hear a noise and then you'd be up. And you'd be like, what is this noise? And then part of our brain can't rest until we figure out what that noise is. It's like, oh, it was a bird. Let's relax.
That's what keeps
and
you reading?
Go to bed. Yeah. A little bit. And that's like kind of what keeps you reading, because you're like, something in your brain's like, ah, it's going to bug me if I can't figure out why, you know, in Knives Out, who did the thing.
And the book, and your book holds up as a mystery. Like, there's a reveal at a certain point that is like, oh.
Thank you.
And if you get that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, you should be able, a careful reader will be able to guess.
Well, a second read, and again, this is a book that, you know, a second read of The Lord of the Rings is a bit of a commitment.
Yeah, it's a long series.
A second read of a mystery book, you know, this is a book that you could, you know, that you might see in an airport.
Right.
Certainly in Portland.
Exactly. And it's something that you can't put down, so you could be able to finish it in a flight because you're going to be flying through it.
Exactly.
It's that good. That's why I'm so excited about talking about it. And I'm saying so with all due humbleness, but honestly, I have to put away a lot of my humbleness to promote this book. And I feel no guilt in doing so, because I really am proud of it.
Well, that's great. And it does kind of go to that Toni Morrison thing where... And
it's a labor of love.
And that extends to all the arts, really. My wife has this, I don't know, she still does the website a little bit, but she wrote a book called Catalog Living. And it's just like pictures from catalogs and then little captions, and it's the people who live in these catalog worlds. She thought of I think she said to people, maybe I shouldn't, but she thought of it on the toilet. Maybe she didn't, that's not public knowledge. But she said she just had this thought, and it was a dumb thought, and there was no desire of monetizing. She didn't think she was going to write a book.
Yeah.
She did it as like a, I think it started as maybe an Instagram page or a Twitter page or Facebook. Then it became a website, and then she got a book. Like,
awesome.
Like all out of simply following it as a labor of love.
Yeah. Because it turns out even if you, like getting anything big and hard done, like huge projects, whether it be like, I don't know, TV, movies, books, whatever they are, it takes the same amount of work if you love it or if you don't. That's the catch. That's what they don't tell you, is that if it's something that you're like, I don't really like this thing or don't love it, and then I'm trying to push it forward to completion, it still takes so much work. So it's kind of like you might as well love it.
Right.
In fact, to love it is the only way to get the energy to actually get it across the finish line.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. You can pick flowers or you can shovel shit. They're both going to take you all day, but you probably want to pick the flowers.
Yeah, absolutely. Although sometimes the shit helps the flowers grow.
Well, we can get into the tying it all.
Absolutely.
Everything leads to everything.
Organic farming needs to happen more in this country.
I'm not saying we avoid the other job. No, everybody plays their part.
Because you're thrilled when it's done.
Yes.
Either way.
Either way, you're thrilled when it's done. But there's also... And this is an interesting point, that you're thrilled when it's done, but it's a different kind of thrill. You're proud when it's done. You're relieved if it's,
right.
You know, there's no pride in that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these are all very inspiring things for artists. So now the first mystery, and we don't have to go into much beyond it, except that it's a very, you know, it's a mystery fraught with peril.
Danger.
And
it's a thriller.
What's the other word? Thriller.
Yeah,
and suspense is the word I was looking for.
And it's funny because it's Bill Walton, obviously.
And that's the other thing. So that's where the separation is. There's a million little mystery novels out there, again, that you can read on a plane. Not all of them. And in fact, only one of them has Bill Walton. Even if only one has Bill Walton, it may be that only one has like a kind of stonery basketball player. You know, like, you couldn't create, you're right, you couldn't create an alternative character like that because it would seem unreal.
He's too true to be fictional.
You have, right, you have to use Bill Walton.
Yeah.
You couldn't have been like the Stoney McGraw mysteries and it's based on Bill Walton because people would be like, this is an unbelievable character.
I thought about that for a while. I was going to be like, oh, you know, it's Will Bolton.
Yeah.
Which sounds a lot like Will Barton. From
Denver Nuggets. Sure. Different kind of player.
Different player. And then it's exactly. Right. See, it gets complicated and confusing.
Did he go to like Cincinnati or something? I think the mystery would be different.
He did not go to Cincinnati.
Oh, did he go to Kent, UConn?
I believe he went to Memphis.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
That's our good. You guys got me on college basketball.
But there's a guy I used to confuse him with who went to Washington, which is near Oregon.
It is?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Marquise Chris?
Tony something. I always used to get
Barton. Tony Snow?
Tony Roten?
Tony Roten.
He is a very low efficiency player.
Yeah. And I suggested to this.
Good in a summer
GM,
ball team, though.
Yes. I know this from fantasy because, like, for a week, if he has four games, he might get you 18 points, but he's taking, like, 150 shots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got green light. He's got his self green light.
Wow. Yep. We went deep on Tony Roten for a second there.
Junior. Yeah.
I would definitely look into Will Barton going to Memphis. I'm not
I think that's
it.
Right.
No,
that
you
sounds
said so
right.
confidently that I backed you up on
okay,
it, so
I
now that's fact.
It.
And that makes, that seems to scan. So where do we see Bill going? He's in Hawaii. I don't know how much you want to tell us. Fire on the Mountain, of course.
Here's all I'll say.
An incredible song, Fire on the Mountain, that usually, does that go into China?
Okay,
no.
We've lost Joe.
I'm thinking of when the Dead play Fire on the Mountain.
I don't know what.
Well, like in their concerts, they usually lead
into
Fire on the Mountain.
Are you leading into coronavirus jokes or whatever?
No,
what are you doing
I was
here?
Trying to think of the song Fire on the Mountain in Dead shows and concerts where it's like, oh, they're going to play China Cat into. What's the song they play out of China all the time? Fire?
I think Fire. China Fire.
Okay. I'm sorry. I got deep in the dead weeds there for a second.
Yeah.
That's a different podcast. No, sorry, guys.
Learning a lot. I like it.
Your tie-dye shirt all of a sudden started glowing for a second. You couldn't see this if you're just listening. But
occasionally, I often listen to the Grateful Dead station on Sirius XM, and they have a couple shows where it's deadheads who kind of guide you through stuff.
That's really helpful, actually, yeah.
What I just did was more coherent than most of those shows, because I've been to like 12, maybe... Yeah. Maybe 15 dead shows, not even in, but around and stuff. Like I went to Boston for a bunch of shows, never got in yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But these guys have been to the 800 shows or whatever, like Bill Walton. So that's a different level of addled.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you capture that with Bill. So again, we're in Hawaii on the mountain.
Every single one I remember crystal clearly. I remember every single song they played, every note.
I've seen him at
every
two or three shows.
Every string that Jerry broke.
Of course you see him. Everybody sees him. He's the giant sequoia.
It's amazing. He is a fixture at those shows.
Wingspan.
Yeah. I wish I had known when I was in college to look for him. You know, I've known in the Dead and Company shows and when they reunited a few years ago, I went to all those and saw him at all those shows.
Yeah.
I wish I had known when I was younger going to the shows. Oh, just look for Bill Walton there and he's probably going to appear.
You don't want to be trapped behind him. Although I was behind him at a Neil Young concert. That was right at the beginning of writing the first book. And my friend Eric Edelstein was like, hey, come to this Bakersfield show.
Sure.
And I was like, should I? Then I went and... He's like, buddy, Walton could be here. I was like, oh wow,
enormous.
Oh, I was just thinking, and it was like a sign from
yes.
Jerry to write the book. When he ended up rows in front of me, and then he stood up, and I was watching Neil and The Promise of the Real through through the through his arms, and it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
That's great. You get an insight into his personality. You know, like
swimming through the ether.
I like when this is kind of a different thing, but like observing him there at the Dead show as a character study.
Yeah.
When I go to pick up my kids at school, I've always liked if you see them and they don't know you're there. And so you want to just kind of watch them interacting with the kids where they don't know you're there to get like the pure version of them.
Right.
Like where
without them putting on the airs.
Right. Rather than interviewing Walton, if you observe him just there, you're getting pure. Well, not that.
Oh, you can soak him in through osmosis.
He's a pretty pure guy anyway.
Yes.
Like there's not any facade with him.
Oh, yeah.
No, which, again, makes him interesting.
Exactly. That's another thing that's so appealing. He's so positive and he's so himself.
Yeah.
And he's been through so much in his life, and it's just like he is kind of a role model for just relentless, upbeat, optimistic positivity about the things that he loves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he sticks to the things he loves.
Yeah.
He's like, let's get back to the things I love, you know? The Missoula flood.
And he'll keep the game, you know, most of the access to Walton that we have, if we're not going to these Dead shows, is watching ESPN.
Yeah.
Where his partner, this is the other thing, for those who don't know, and I said this a long time ago when we did the other interview, but Bill Walton's partner, Dave Pasch, you couldn't write that character to accompany him any better because that guy is a creationist.
Yeah.
That guy is a hardcore, like, Christian, Bible is truth person.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus, like, the science / psychedelic guy.
Yeah.
Like the brilliance of that pairing is amazing. And ESPN, I do not give them credit for like being like, maybe if someone consciously put them together with that thought, make that man the president.
Yes. Yeah. He gets it because he saw how annoyed Dave Pasch was by Walton and their relationship just kept being just full of tension. Even though it's almost like Walton is doesn't really notice. That's his whole bit, is that he doesn't know who Dave Pasch is. And he keeps asking, who are you?
Yes. And then I watched a couple times where he just challenges this guy's religious beliefs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with science.
Yeah.
Right on the air. He's just like, come on. And he just goes at him. But I think Pasch has realized, because Pasch is a businessman.
He's a perfect straight man, and he does realize that people are. His social media probably blows up every time he does stuff with Walton.
He needs Walton more than Walton needs him.
I mean, come on. It was like, you know, you can swap him in for Ryan Russillo, and no one was going to really know at the end of the day. But I will say this to his credit: he plays into it. And he is such a I think he's a great play-by-play.
Yeah.
I really do think he's a great play-by-play.
I'm not saying that Walton doesn't benefit from him. I do think it is the perfect pairing. I just think like Walton, you know, Walton can play with a bunch of different types of guys and create and be interesting. Like, you're right. Russillo would present a whole nother thing because he'd have Russillo's like over broiness that he might challenge with his hippiness stuff a little bit. Walton's going to challenge something with everybody.
Like Lawler, Jerry Lawler's last broadcast on the Clippers last year. Did you watch that?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It was the final game of the Clippers regular season, and Walton was his...
Is Jerry Lawler the wrestler and Ralph Lawler?
I was thinking of that Lawler.
I said the wrong Lawler.
Yes. Okay, good.
Now,
good.
We're clear. Yeah. We're
great. Ralph Lawler. Good.
They are announcers. They're both announcers.
But I was confused as well. Yeah. Good. I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I
Ralph
know
Lawler.
This.
Sorry. Oh, me, oh, my.
I think I saw the last game with Bill a little bit.
It was probably the best announced basketball game I've ever seen.
Really?
It was so entertaining throughout. Because Ralph also has his, like, his whole thing is being annoyed by his color guy.
Yeah.
And that might have been shaped because I wish I could go and find old broadcasts of when those two were partners in the 80s.
Is that what
Clippers.
It was when he was doing the Clippers games? Now, Walton played with the San Diego Clippers, right?
He did, briefly.
Briefly.
Yeah.
At the end?
That was, like, when his career was derailed with, like,
before the Celtics.
Injuries, pre-Celtics.
He got back together. Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't have the mobility. Boy, that was a fun team. We talked about those Celtics teams. Never a better team of big passers than that team. There never will be.
Right. Oh, no, yeah.
You got Walton, Bird, and McHale. quite frankly, who was a good inside player.
Great cutters.
Oh yeah, no,
Bird
yeah.
And Ainge were such were incredible at cutting, and that you got to have guys who can cut if you're one.
I mean
that
you know, I hate the Celtics, but that's an all-time great team, and you're right, it was built completely. I'm not even mentioning Big Chief and Dennis Johnson, both in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, DJ, yeah.
Yep. So yeah, that team was amazing, and Walton was the Walton Bird pairing is like, it's white man paradise there, but it's like geniuses, savants with a ball.
Mm-hmm. But absolutely. And there is stories of Walton taking that team to a dead show in Boston, and that would be I wish.
What year was that?
I think it was 86.
Okay, 86.
Did you go to that show?
No, I'm not that old. I went to the last show at Boston Garden.
Oh wow!
A guy named Aja appeared on the SUNY Albany campus with a bunch of like ramen noodles and powders, and one of my sweet mates brings him in because he's like, he can get us tickets at the dead shows in Boston. So we drive his ass out to Boston, and he disappears.
Oh man! Yeah,
so the three of us,
classic Aja,
classic Aja, and we're looking for him. You know, we end up taking, my friend, we all took some drugs.
Oh, that'll help you find somebody.
Yeah. And then my other friend is like, yeah, I took I bought a $10 bagel. I think there were drugs in it. I'm like, yes. And so he was going
crazy.
So
it really wasn't everything bagel.
It wasn't everything bagel. And we're looking for this guy all over.
Poppy seeds are real poppies.
Yeah. This guy appears at the end of the night with like 30 backpacks that he said he found in a garbage can.
Ooh, how ominous.
He stole. So this guy stole, but deadheads leave their stuff around.
Oh, so now you're an accomplice.
Yeah. I mean, and he's trading the backpacks to people for donuts, I see. And I'm like, hey, man, I drove you out from
what
Albany.
Are you in the donuts?
Like someone had a bunch of Dunkin' Donuts he's like, hey, I'll give you a backpack for a donut. And I'm like, hey, man, I drove you from Albany here. He's like, yeah. It was such a jerk.
I'm out of backpacks.
Wow. Yeah. He's got 20 backpacks.
Sorry,
what do you
man.
Mean?
I need these backpacks.
Very crazy. Anyway, that was the last dead show in Boston. And a bunch of deadheads, myself included, thought they were going to charge the gate to get in. We didn't have tickets.
That was the
plan. We're going to rush the gate. That was the plan. And there's like three cops, and everyone like, it's like, no.
Yeah, but it's at a dead show.
Yes! No! Yeah. No,
here we go on three guys.
Yes!
One, two.
Should we? No, maybe there's another entrance.
Let's walk around a little bit more.
See if we can find an open door. Anyway. All right, what else do you have to get? This has gone more than in length than I thought. We're not even going to do our baseball previews tonight, folks. You'll get them tomorrow. I can handle, and it gives me something to do tomorrow when I have no guests. Yeah. So
that's okay. I only have Astros bits. I have nothing to say about baseball.
And I've used a few of those. If you want to go back and listen to episodes, we have an exclusive interview. We have a re-apology from Astros owner Jim Crane after he botched the first one. And then we also have exclusive interview with the World Series trophy, which the commissioner referred to as a piece of metal. So you get a little bit of feedback on that. Yeah. Those are a few weeks ago. You can look for those. And it didn't. That interview did not go well for Commissioner Rob Manfred, I'll tell you that, or for owner Jim Crane, who apparently hunts humans, according to the trophy. Anyway, you'll have to go back and listen.
Not surprised. Not surprised.
Yeah. He also may be the Zodiac killer, according to the trophy. But again, you got to go back and listen.
I can't go back and listen.
A mystery.
Absolutely.
But this mystery. So the book is coming out. Tell us when the book is coming out and when we can get it.
Okay, not sure when it's going to be released.
Right.
But just go to Amazon.
Amazon.
And search for James Kirkland, Fire on the Mountain, The Bill Walton Mysteries. It's just, it's super exciting. I'll give you one tease.
The first book is still available, Friend of
the
Devil. The
first book, Friend of the Devil, is also still available. You haven't read that one. You don't need to read the first one to read the second
one.
That's
nice.
There's plenty of books like Jack Reacher. I started in the middle. And I read it, and I was like, "Oh wait, I love this!" And I went back.
Another advantage of Bill Walton, actually. Another advantage of Bill Walton, his backstory is there. You don't have to provide the backstory at all. You can for effect, or for where it comes in, or you can fabricate stories from his past. But going in, you got an idea what you're dealing with him.
Yes, that definitely.
The surprise is.
Never cease.
Well, that's what
you
know
about
him.
That's how he's consistently surprising. that's his game that he plays, is that you never quite, but it's always going to keep you on your toes.
He's a little like you, Dan.
Oh, I love him. My favorite thing is I know he never holds back.
Yes.
Or filters anything.
Yes.
Yeah. So anytime you listen to him, it's always like, oh, yes, because everybody else is like towing the NBA.
It's the purity.
Line. But he just, and the uncomfortable moments it creates when he brings that stuff up, just I wring my hands in
delight. We all, again, and I think, you know, we all have a similar background relatively. We're all kind of improviser, artist-y, hippie-ish guys in some way or another. And we all appreciate sincerity and authenticity.
Yes.
You know, and it has different, for I'm a very sincere and authentic person. I was saying before, Bernie Sanders, I think he's pure. Mm-hmm. He's a pure and authentic guy. I don't know if that's the best thing in the world necessarily. Right. I'll take it over insincere every time.
Yeah.
The amount of that purity, and I run into this sometimes, is there are times when you should kind of check your purity if it's going to damage you. Like, if you're
tact.
Yes. That's
tact.
A word I need.
It's okay to be pure and have tact.
And that and it is not a surrender.
No.
To be tactful at the expense of sincerity.
Right.
This is my challenge in life.
Yeah. And you see, it's just like, you know, back in the day, there was, the people could say things that were quite cutting, but they had tact. So you're like,
Right.
You know, to this day, they do in the UK and stuff. I think they're very, you know, they always err on the side of tact. Right?
Yes.
Not
and,
always.
But and yet, and yet their parliament is the most interesting government in the world.
Yes,
the way they can yell at each other and stuff like that's the government I'd want to be in. Yeah. That would serve my personality. Like
it's
you get to do a tight five.
Slightly more on. Yeah,
you know, like,
you would crush.
I mean, yeah, it's like a roast.
Yeah.
You know, with a little wonkiness. That's where I might fail.
Right. Yeah. If that's how we passed bills, though, is that we just like roasted the bill. And at the end,
I mean,
who wants to vote for this?
That and a lot of, you know, ultimately with the politics or whatever, who knows? In terms of pure enjoyment factor, I wanted to see Warren and Trump because he wouldn't understand it. He wouldn't know most of the jokes she's making about him, but she would have eviscerated him in a way. He wouldn't even, I don't think he would ever be able to recover from, because she's not as pure as Bernie, but she is more organized than Bernie in her mind.
She's better at debates.
Yes.
And she's
so quick.
Eviscerated Bloomberg. And
and that was prepared and everything, but she brought it out at the right time.
Yeah.
He had prepared crap that he blew horribly.
Yeah.
Anyway, that we didn't mean to get
Sorry
back into that.
Politics.
Sorry about that, folks. So go on to Amazon and buy Friend of the Devil, which you don't have to, but I'm going to say it helps because if nothing else, it has that lead in at the end.
Yeah.
So you go right from one to the other. And then Fire on the Mountain will be coming out probably in the next couple months.
You know, literally, when this is released, I don't know what it's going to be. Don't tell me.
Okay.
But you go on the website and on Amazon, you'll find it. Order it.
Pre-order, right?
Yeah, it's a pre-order basically, but it'll come as soon as it's ready. It's ready to buy. Audiobook.
All written.
Audiobook for the first book is available too.
Who does the audio? Ooh.
Read by the author, yours truly. So you can hear me
Wait,
in my dulcet
that's,
tones.
That's great. Yes.
Reading the first book. Audiobook for the second book hasn't come out yet. The ebook is there. So if you want to read it on Kindle, it's available. Hopefully we're going to have some merch soon that'll be available.
I got a question.
Yeah.
I got a question on the audiobook.
Now,
you're Walton. We've heard it right here. When you're
passable,
doing
yeah.
But when you're doing the book, you do the Walton as the Walton.
You kind of have to.
Right.
It didn't feel right.
So what about the Pash?
I just try to be as kind of you know, it's my own version of Pash.
Right. Right.
It's like
he nerded up a little bit.
He's more of an he's just more of a
he is
an announcer.
Yes.
He's got a good announcer voice.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. That Mike Breen kind of just like this guy has been. Calling high school games like he was a pro.
Yeah.
You know, listening to Marv Albert and all that. He does. He has that announcer's cadence all the way.
He's got the cadence. He's got the rhythm of a good broadcast guy.
Yeah.
And it's more about an ear. He really can. That's why he does allow for really funny pauses between him.
Oh,
and having the rhythm of that is.
They have grown as a comedy team.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Originally, a lot of the comedy came from the authenticity of the frustration.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then you're,
and
then
it is authentic because you know, Walton can never respect him because he Walton offered him tickets to a Phish show on New Year's Eve, and Pash turned him down.
Yeah.
And he can't respect him as a human being.
Right,
after
if
that.
You're not going to do that,
like,
yeah,
where are you a disorganized person from head to toe? But
I got to say, a Phish or a Dead show on New Year's Eve is about the only thing I could consider to leave my house. I'm not going to like some
that's
big
huge.
Public party.
That's a huge review.
But I mean, like a concert I can get into. You're in the concert. You're
yes.
enjoying the show. You're not, I mean, you're surrounded by like-minded people. You go to, and maybe you're surrounded by like-minded people in New York City too at that, but those are people who didn't figure out they're not going to be able to piss all
yes.
night.
Right.
You know, like a concert is about the only way I'll leave my house on New Year's Eve.
I will say this about New York and New Year's Eve and concerts.
Into the mic, not the side.
How, I can't see.
Well, you
got
to talk into the front of those. You got to talk into the front. Don't look at it. Just talk into it.
Madison Square Garden, New Year's 2004. And I've always avoided New York City,
sure.
except for this one time. Sleater-Kinney, Flaming Lips, and Wilco. And then they all came out in their pajamas and performed after the show till the union guys would leave till about 2 a.m.
On New Year's Eve. Wow.
That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Nice show.
And I'm a staunch avoid crowd with that one exception.
There you go.
Yeah.
A good concert will bring us out. And a good book will do you right.
Yes.
So I think I've given all the info.
Yeah.
Anything else
you.
I didn't plug? Oh, you're welcome. Next time you...
No, it's just like, hey, it's really hard to get these... books, independently published books out there. Like, it's a challenge I welcome, and I'm just trying to spread the word and
well,
publicize
and because
as
you
can,
did
because
so,
I really
you made
do
something
believe
fun
it.
And
yeah,
funny,
yeah,
and
I
read the first
it.
Book, and it's fun and funny. So I'm not you know.
Thank you. They're serious books, but they don't take themselves seriously.
No, and that's what we need right now.
Yeah,
and exactly, you've created something. Look, you're a funny guy, and you've created something funny. You know, when you do improv, we all do improv, and it's so temporal.
Yeah.
So temporary. Like, you do the funniest thing I've said might have been in an improv show.
Yeah. Somebody
it's gone.
Ripped it off.
It's gone. Right, yeah. Right, whatever. You write the book, you've got it, and it's there to share with people forever.
Yes.
And so you want to share
yes.
all of that. So help this guy out and do that, folks.
Thank you.
I'd
appreciate it.
Yeah. Dan and I were considering, we didn't do it, but we were thinking, oh, maybe we'll ask if you want to play a little 24 afterwards. I don't know if you know this, but 21 has become 24 for Kobe now.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Yeah. It was kind of, we played, we just did an episode, and we randomly went to the park, and we were going to just play, he and I, some other guy there.
Max.
Nice. Max. So we're like, you want to play 21? He's like, why don't we make it 24? It was 2 days after Kobe. He goes, and we figured, you know, he just presented it. He says, you play to 24, and then if you miss, you go down to 8.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because Kobe would want you to play more.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
It
was great.
And of course, I
love that. It's the first time hearing him.
Yeah.
Max
is the one who invented it, but I think as like an L.A. thing, it'd be funny if that's what it turned into.
Now, yeah.
You know, 21 is now 24
in
California.
Yeah, I'll spread that around.
Because Kobe, you know, and we did our Kobe episode, and he's a complicated guy.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the basketball, to me, that fits what Kobe would do. He wants to score more, and if you miss, you go back further.
Play forever.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, all right.
How'd that
you
game
your
turn
fingers
out,
bleed.
Just for the record?
You scored as much as the other two of us combined.
Yeah, okay.
The only points that guy scored were on threes and then his free throws. The only points I scored were on drives and one or two. You had a mid-range game that was really good.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you have kind of, and I your hair's shorter now, but... I always liken you to a Pau Gasol.
Mm-hmm.
Some
I
of
have
your,
been called so, that before.
Your
in
appearance?
Europe, in Amsterdam when
certainly.
I played basketball.
You played in Europe like Pau.
Hey, Gasol, pass the ball, huh?
Right.
Stop taking these long twos.
Yes.
I'd be like, listen, guys. Okay, you can, I let him call me Gasol.
Yeah, and that's not a bad game to have. Also a pretty talented, skilled guy for a big man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Champion.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, we're going to go, but I'll leave this. I think Tony Kukoc was underrated.
I mean, I think that's uncontroversial. I think
okay,
you,
good.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right. Yeah. I didn't know if it was or not. But
yeah, no, he's really good.
I rescind that. Maybe I won't even say it. I mean, I'll erase it.
We should cut this part out.
Okay. Bye.